Well, good evening, everyone, and God bless each one of you. And I want to welcome you here in Jesus' name this evening. The one, the name and the person that we're looking at this evening and that I want to talk about. It was a new thought to me, and it was in reference to reading a regular book, but back here in Miss Heidi's room, she has on the wall, reading gives you some place to go when you have to stay where you are. And tonight, we have to stay right here where we're at in Strawberry, Arkansas. And yet, we can read and let's go to a place that we're going to read about. And let's go to the place that is called the Garden of Gethsemane. So as we read this, think about this, and we can go there as we read in our minds. And, just blessed with thinking about that and going where we read. I guess I need to read more. Maybe I could go places. So Matthew 26, I want to read verses 36 to 45, starting off. And looking at this story of Jesus' crucifixion, I read it and looked at it, and it felt like a really long, drawn out story, and I wasn't sure what all should I read the whole entire thing. And so basically I just wanted to look more at Jesus' suffering and what he went through for us this evening, and not to take anything away from his resurrection or his power today. And I hope I don't do injustice to God in any way by not focusing on that so much. So Matthew 26, verse 36 to 45. We'll start reading with that. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep and saith unto Peter, What, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. And the picture that I see here is a man much the same as we are here today. And Jesus seen what was coming. And I believe he dreaded the nails and the terrible pain that comes with being crucified, the same as we would. I believe he struggled with knowing the devastation that his disciples would feel, his family, his friends, when this would happen to him. I think he's seen all of that. And it bothered him the same as it would us. He saw the betrayal of one of his own disciples and the rest of his disciples that would forsake him and flee when they said they wouldn't. I think he's seen that. And if that wasn't enough, Jesus seen the separation and the forsaking that God would have to do to him when he would take on the sins of the world. And I think that was probably the hardest thing, just knowing that God was separating him from himself, because sin and God cannot be together. And he was taking the sins of the world on him and the guilt of the world. And that was weighing on him. And I believe all of these things were laying heavy on Jesus. And this struggle that Jesus was facing was more intense than any struggle we'll ever face. And in Matthew 7, verse 5, it says that Jesus' own brothers rejected him and ridiculed him. And, you know, that's hard when it's hard when anybody rejects you. But if your own family rejects you, that he had that too. He felt that. Now let's go to verse 46, and I'll read verses 46 to 56. Jesus said, "Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me." And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, "Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast." And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, "Hail, Master," and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, "Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? In that same hour said Jesus to the multitudes, Are you come out against me? Are you come out as against a thief? With swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled." And you know, I don't know who you viewed these people as. In my mind, it was always, I don't know why, I just always blamed the Romans for coming and getting Jesus. And but in looking into this, this was not Roman soldiers. This was not the army that come and got Jesus. This was the religious leaders of the day and people that he knew, people that he had sat and talked with. And I don't know how that felt to Jesus for sure, but in my mind, it would have been easier if the Roman soldiers would have come and grabbed Jesus. But to know these religious leaders that were supposed to be God's people were doing this to him, that was just another rejection that he would have faced. Verse 59 through 67. Verse 59, "Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came two false witnesses, and they said, This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said unto him, Answerest thou nothing? What is it with these witnesses against thee? But Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God, that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus saith unto him, Thou hast said, nevertheless I say unto you, hereafter shall you see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, He has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard this blasphemy. What think ye? They answered and said, He is guilty of death. Then did they spit in his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands. So these same religious people, the people that he would have tried to convince of God and of God's plan, these same religious people spit in his face and hit him. And can you imagine it's hard to imagine Jesus sitting there and taking that. Let's go to Matthew 27, verses verse 11. Matthew 27, verse 11 through 14. And this is Jesus before Pilate. And Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, Art thou the king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto him, Thou sayest. And when he was accused of the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then said Pilate unto him, Hearest thou not how many things they witness against thee? And he answered him to never a word, insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. And we see here how Jesus just didn't defend himself. He didn't say anything. He took what they threw at him, though it was wrong. And Pilate was very surprised at this. He marveled greatly. He was used to people. I figure Pilate was used to people that were guilty trying their best to talk themselves out of this death sentence that was headed towards Jesus. He was used to people begging for mercy, and Jesus didn't say a word. In same chapter, verse 27, I'll read verses 27 through 54. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the common hall and gathered unto him the whole band of soldiers. And they stripped him and put on him a scarlet robe. And when they had plaited a crown of thorns, they put it upon his head and a reed in his right hand. And they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, Hail, King of the Jews. And they spit upon him and took the reed and smote him on the head. And after that they had mocked him, they took the robe off from him and put his own raiment on him and led him away to crucify him. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross. And when they were coming to a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him vinegar to drink mingled with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet. They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there, and set up over his head his accusation written, This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand and another on the left. And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. The thieves also which were crucified with him cast the same in his teeth. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, and I'll just use the English version because I don't know how to say that very good. Jesus said, My God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And some of them that stood there, when they heard that, said, This man calleth for Elias. And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. The rest said, Let us see whether Elias will come to save him. Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in twain, from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose, and came out of the graves after his resurrection, and went into the holy city, and appeared unto many. I think that was all I was going to read. Yes. I actually was going to stop it. No, that's right. I still need to read. 54, I'm sorry. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus, saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, truly, this was the Son of God. In verse 29, it says that they mocked Jesus and they called him King of the Jews. And he was spit on the second time. And a crown of thorns was put on his head. And they put a staff in Jesus' hand. And, you know, it was a picture that I hadn't really seen before of Jesus. They had him there after he had been beaten. They put these thorns on his head. And they give him a staff to hold. And then they stood there in front of him and just mocked him. And he just stood there. Then, is that in verse 29? Shortly after that, they took the staff away from him and then hit him on the head with it. And I can imagine just driving the thorns down in his head. And I think most of us have experienced thorns. And they hurt. And to imagine them being drove into your head. And Jesus just stood there and he took that. And another thing that was a new thought to me that I didn't realize this, when they offered him in verse... Yeah, that when they got to Golgotha, they gave him vinegar to drink mingled with gall. And the vinegar was basically a spoiled wine or something like that, and it would deaden your pain. It was supposed to help crucifixion be less painful. And gall was some kind of a narcotic thing that would also deaden his pain. And Jesus wouldn't take it. I think Jesus knew what it was, but he took all the pain that it gave. He would not take a painkiller on this. And that was new. That was new to me. That really struck me. Verse 36. You know, they said this. That was after he was crucified. They said, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." And you know, Jesus was a king, but he was not one that man had surrounded and corralled up and brought in. Jesus, as a king, surrendered himself to man, and he didn't have to do that. He did that of his own choice. And you think about Jesus there. He dreaded what he had coming to him. And when we think of the pain he was going through, and it's like, what kept him there? What kept him on the cross? What was it that caused Jesus and God, jointly, I think, to let this even happen? And a thought that I heard recently, it actually came from one of y'all, and I don't know, I've never thought of it in this way, but when God looked down and seen man's sinful condition and didn't know what to do or wondered what to do, did Jesus come to him and say, "Let me go down and die for them"? Was it Jesus' thought? And I never thought about that. I don't read that in the Bible. And so I'm not here to say that's what it was. But Jesus was willing. And God was willing to let him come. There's a song, thinking about what kept him there. The song, "How Deep the Father's Love for Us." And then in part of that song it says, "It was my sins that held him there." And it's just hard to imagine God being willing to let his son go through this. And it's more than we can even imagine. And none of us have had this. I know I've mentioned it before, but when Reagan got kicked by the horse, and, you know, that was my only son. And so, you know, it felt awful. And I didn't like it. And I'll say this. I honestly, it crossed my mind to kill all four of them horses in my pasture because of what they had done to my son. And so to envision God looking down and watching this, watching his son go through this, spit on somebody, Jesus was sinless, and yet man was just treating him like this. And I just marvel that God could let that happen. the amount of love that it would actually take. I don't think any of us could actually pull that off. It would take, God is the only one that could do that. You know, I sit there and I wonder, it's a wonder that God didn't just drop an atomic bomb on the earth or something, like just, because he was sorry he'd even made man at one time. It tells us in the Bible. And for man to take his son, his only son, and to treat him like this, it is just amazing to me that he didn't snuff man off the earth. In closing, I want to go back to Matthew 26 and verse 26 through 29. And I thought I would read this, you know, starting out, and this is when Jesus would have done this, and then the story took place after. But, you know, in reading it, I thought, well, it would really be more fitting to read it afterwards, and what Jesus was telling his, doing with his disciples. And as they were, in verse 26 through 29, and as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, "Drink ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." And so there where it says in verse 27, "Drink ye all of it," I wondered what that meant. And, you know, I had to think about, was he pointing forward to his suffering? You know, he took a lot. He drank a lot out of his cup. And, you know, you think, why couldn't he stop after he had been beaten? Why couldn't he stop after he had been made mocked and whatever all? But he took all the cup God gave him. He took it all. And, you know, I don't claim to know exactly what that means. But does it mean that whatever cup God calls us to drink today, whatever it is, to just drink all of it, do whatever God asks of us, is that what he's trying to help us to see? Because Jesus went all the way. He didn't take some of it and kick the rest of it out. And he could have. And I don't think God would have said anything about it if he would have. Jesus went all the way for us. Another thing he said there in these verses, he took bread and blessed it, and he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them. So do we give, like tonight, we are rejoicing in what Jesus has done for us, and we are to be thankful. And I think we are. I don't doubt at all that we all are very thankful. And it's right to give thanks to God for what he's done for us and for Jesus, for what he has done for us, what he has volunteered to go through for us. So that's all I have this evening. Let's just, as we partake of communion, just remember Jesus went all the way for us, and he didn't have to. It was only love and our sins that held him there. So that's all I have. Am I supposed to pray? Okay. Why don't we stand for prayer?